This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, music and nonviolence. Tonight's guest, folk singer, nonviolent protester, Joan Baez. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in the country. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. And now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. What is it that makes us a violent people? Why do we so casually accept that we will kill each other with our automobiles at the rate of 50,000 people a year? Why doesn't it really bother us that some 12,000 people in the United States will die by the gun this year? And why do we attack and wound each other in 1,000 subtle ways? Can we change? Can we learn to be less violent? These are the kind of questions you may want to ask our Night Call guest. She is Joan Baez, folk singer, nonviolent protester, enemy of the draft, and of anything else having to do with violence. Ms. Baez is also founder of the Institute for the Study of Nonviolence in California. She is standing by now in Carmel Valley, California, to answer your questions. Ms. Baez, good evening. Thank you so very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ms. Baez, why do you feel there is so much violence in our country?
Well, I don't think any of us can be shocked in this century, probably not in any other century, why violence continues. If we could answer why it really started, we might have something. But I think that the only thing we have to do at this point is try to combat it. And I think that we can't do this domestically unless we do it, on a worldwide scale. That's what makes it so difficult. And so, for instance, I don't think it's shocking that the crimes that people consider shocking, like Martin King's assassination and Kennedy's assassination, these things aren't shocking anymore in a world where people accept the assumption that somewhere at some time it's okay for us to kill each other, just depending on where and when. And what I would suggest is that what we have to learn is that at no time anywhere is it okay for a man to take another man's life. And if we ever got that straight in our minds, I think that we might be able to rearrange our society so that we don't murder each other so easily.
Is this the reason for your founding the Institute for the Study of Nonviolence?
Yeah, basically that's it. I think not only is it possible for us to learn how to be civilized, I mean, we have thousands of years that look in a way very discouraging in back of us because men have spent most of their energies preparing for wars and then fighting them and then killing each other off. And so one might say there's no hope for the future because men are so stupid. And I would say, it doesn't look too hopeful, but I think not only is there a possibility that we change, but I think if we don't change, that we'll really do ourselves in once and for all. And I think human nature is a funny thing. I think it's frightening the way we've acted, but I think it's encouraging to think that men have the capacity to change. I mean, to change in a real way. I would use an example like a couple of hundred years ago. Most people at a public gathering, in a local level, would be armed because that was the way men were, and men took it for granted that they would always be that way. And now within a nation, we pretty much have that cleared up, although it's getting bad right now again. But it isn't looked upon as the thing to do to tote guns around. And yet, on an international level, it's still considered the thing to do. I think that someday we may have rearranged our thinking in a way that we solve international differences without dropping bombs on each other. I think that kind of thing is a possibility. And the school is to study every aspect of nonviolence, which is a word which is not only just really unpopular right now, but I think practically totally misunderstood. And if you have questions about, anything about it, why don't you ask?
Well, I'm very curious about the school. First, what is the curriculum of the school? And secondly, how do you select your students?
Well, we don't select the students. That's one of the nice things about it. You have to be, 18 and up, or else have your parents' consent to come to the school. And there's a small tuition, $15 a week. And right now, the school, we're in the process of moving the school from Carmel to Palo Alto, so we're not in session. And it consists of reading certain materials. For instance, Aldous Huxley's Ends and Means, or Fisher's Life of Gandhi, or things that could give us an insight into a way of thinking that's outside the boundaries of say, nationalism and tribalism. A fresh outlook on life. And then some amount of silent meditation, which is just kind of trying to pull yourself together a little bit each day. And then to try to discuss, through discussion and through reading, some real ways to try to begin to apply the concept of non-murder to everyday life. I mean, in the country where 80% of your tax dollar goes to building weapons and $6 million an hour is spent in Vietnam, how do you really try to make your lives connect with a way of life that opposes this in some kind of effective fashion? And obviously, we haven't been any great success up till now, but I think, the school is embryonic, like a lot of other things.
Are there any practical applications that a student can utilize once a student leaves the school?
Well, I would say the most practical thing is something that somebody else probably wouldn't consider practical at all. We make a joke about the school that our best graduates go on to jail. I mean, like a young man who has come to the school because he feels his life isn't making sense. And obviously, most young men around 17, 18 years old are going to be confronting one major problem, that's selective service. And, if a certain person comes to a decision while he's at the school, through the discussions and the quiet times, that he really has to live out his life according to his own conscience, I think that this begins to be practical because he has only one life, and with that life, he has to build something, he has to build goodness. And if I think that's the only way we can really do it, is by building day by day, building some kind of decency and some kind of decent relationship with our brothers, on the other side of the earth. And so in his decision to, say, turn in his card and go to jail rather than be willing to take part in murdering people, I think this is a practical, this is a practical solution at least to his life.
Well, is it not possible that certain critics of your philosophy would feel that you are giving birth to a number of draft dodgers and a number of people who perhaps are not in tune with what the establishment says should be done?
Sure, yeah.
Does this concern you?
Well, it concerns me only in that it's easy to write off something like that with fear. I mean, for instance, the judge who tried and sentenced my husband for refusing to be inducted. He was, I feel that he was really frightened, as though we were threatening the whole groundwork of his way of thinking and his job and his way, his whole way of life, because we were saying this particular law has to be disobeyed because it isn't any good. Ideally, I would like to reach that man too. I mean, I'd like to reach that judge and say, and really try to explain to him what we're all about. Not that we're trying to tear things apart, but that we're trying to build something fresh and something decent.
Miss Baez, we have a number of Night Call listeners standing by who would like to talk to you tonight.
Sure.
And just a reminder to our Night Call listeners of our telephone numbers from the East and Midwest, you may call us collect at area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. From the West, you may call us collect at area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. 949-3357. And from the New York area, we welcome your calls at 866-5010. Tonight, our discussion is, or our conversation, rather, is music and nonviolence. Our guest tonight is folk singer Miss Joan Baez, calling in from Carmel Valley, California. We'll take our first call from Toledo, Ohio. Mr. Salvador is hearing Night Call over WCWA. Mr. Salvador, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Dale, it's nice to talk with you. We've been very appreciative here in Toledo of your fine program. I've got two questions for Ms. Baez. One, I'd like to know her reactions to the name-calling that comes as a result of some of the work that she's been doing. A friend of mine here in town, I'm not sure she's still a friend, when I asked to buy some music at a local music store, said, well, you're certainly not going to buy any of that stuff by that communist Joan Baez, are you? And I wonder... First of all, Ms. Baez, are you a communist? And I say that in quotes. And secondly, how do you react to the labels that are placed upon the youth movements in our country, hippies and yippies and all the rest?
Okay. No, I'm not a communist, and my objections to communism are the same as my objections to any other ism which okays murder, which is just about any ism you could name. I think I'd be just as unpopular in the communist countries as I am here. If you go around talking about not killing people, it makes people call you names. I think the name-calling comes out of fear. I mean, you know, as with children on a playground, if somebody calls somebody else a dirty name, it's because somehow he feels threatened. And so the question is, how do you keep from threatening people, and how do you, you know, how can you get through to somebody really without frightening them or without putting them off? And when I find the answer to that, I'll be all set. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
I have one other question.
Oh, go ahead. Right.
It's been suggested that in history, Martin Luther particularly was more influential in the music he wrote than in all the sermons that he preached. Would you like to comment on the impact of music in America today and in some of the movements, particularly in the resistance movement and the anti-war movement?
Well, I think that music and you know, the art are an absolute necessity. I think that what's so nerve-wracking about this particular decade is that no one thing is enough. Certainly not music. Certainly not painting. Certainly not you know, any one thing. And so if I ever sound as though I'm putting down any of these things, it's because in desperation I feel that musicians have to do things aside from play their music, and so it's both. I mean, I feel that it's terribly important. I don't think there could be a decent revolution, a loving revolution, without music. But at the same time, I don't think we have the time to just sing.
Yeah. Have you discovered that some of the young people particularly have begun singing the music because it was fun, and discovered that out of the content of it that they begin to have their lives somewhat changed?
Well, I think there's a certain... I think there's a certain atmosphere surrounding, you know, groups of musicians, but I'm very skeptical of it. I mean, it's something like what the freedom that people say, or the liberation that people say, comes from drugs. I don't trust it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's easy to say, write a song about a revolution, you know, and sort of feel as though you've done your bit. Or I would say that most of the musicians I try to talk with, for the most part, they'll usually know what I'm talking about, but think they do because they sing about it.
Yeah.
Mr. Salvador, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Ms. Joan Baez, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Joan Baez after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and a worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better educations, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. A chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others. To give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Joan Baez about the nonviolent protest. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Miss Joan Baez, who is with us tonight, or I should say by telephone. She's calling in from Carmel Valley, California. And this time we'll go out to Concord, Ohio. Mr. Totzer, I hope, is calling in from WMCO-FM. Mr. Totzer?
Yes.
How are you, sir?
Okay.
Your question?
Miss Baez, I'd like to ask, do you feel that the type of media you use in your protest has been having a positive effect and is a result you would like to get? And how?
Okay. It's hard to get positive results, you know, and so I don't know which media you're talking about because I try to use as many as, you know, as I can. So which exactly do you mean?
Well, I'm speaking specifically about your music.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. See, I can't. I do only what I can do, and if I were to try to do everything based on how effective I thought it would be, I might be on the wrong track. I mean, for instance, with the singing, I have to sing A, what I think is beautiful, and B, what I think might reach people, and then, you know, hope for the best. In other fields, I hope I can be more effective, certainly, than I've been. I don't know if that answers you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, and this time we will take a local call. Mr. Peter Baez is calling in from WLIB-FM. Mr. Baez?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Baez. Joan, we have the same name, but this is what I want to ask you. Now, as a leader in the SMC, the Student Mobilization Committee, I've been told by a lot of young black people who were with me in the nonviolent movement that they say, you know, we're kind of sick and tired of, you know, talking. We want some action.
Yeah.
And they've gotten to the point now that they felt that they're so discouraged and they're so depressed that they've got to go to violence. But I've told them that right now, I think it's better that we decide to talk it out with the people that we sit in, and that we just keep on singing, "We Shall Overcome," instead of rioting and looting, because this way the point will get across to the power structure. And it so happens that I think my convictions are correct because you take, for instance, Harlem, 1965, when they were riding over there. Now, true poverty programs came into effect, and people were getting money. But all it is just like a payoff not to keep them to riot. They have said, it's almost like if they have said, okay, we will give you what you want, but do not come into our territory, because due to the riots, they've given an impression that they are people that they're just going to keep on riding if they don't get what they're after.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's very difficult, you know, at this point and this year, maybe more than even the few years in the past, to criticize, you know, or to dwell on whatever kind of angry action is going to come out of the black community, because it's so understandable that anger is going to be coming out of black communities. I agree that, I think the blacks have learned the lessons from the white just too well.
That's correct.
I think they've picked up all of our bad habits and are, you know, and whenever they put them into effect, unfortunately, they're just adding to the mess, you know, that's going to lead
that violence is going to solve anything.
Destruction. But what, you know, I think probably we agree, so there's not, you know, we don't really have to talk too long about it, but, you know, but what real action do we take? I think you continue struggling to try to find imaginative, imaginative and intelligent approaches. I think if one could ever make clear to the black community or the white community or any community that as long as they continue with this kind of violence, it has nothing to do with the word revolution.
That is right. That is correct, because when I was, due to the fact that I was in Mexico City in July, I saw a part of the student demonstrations, and I saw what it led to. Tanks in the street, and it seemed like you were in Vietnam. You don't even have to go to 3,000 miles away. You saw it right there.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so it's up to us to think of something more appealing to people who are angry than to go tend to act out their anger. That's all.
What are some of the approaches that you would suggest?
Well, I would say, for instance, there's a good experiment going on in L.A. I'm not sure whether it's still going on, but it was begun by one of the L.A. branches of resistance. This isn't especially with black community, but it was with policemen. They were trying to get together with about 60 policemen in a certain area to get them to experiment with not wearing guns for a certain period of time. I mean, there was another group of resistance up in Palo Alto area was trying, and I think at least had organized to some degree if the next riot happens in this area, to confront the National Guard and lie down in front of the National Guard, because I think when the National Guard comes in is when the real disaster breaks, you know, and supposedly
correct.
Quelling the riots is when the real blood flows, and so to stop them in their tracks, I think, you know, would be a really practical solution.
That's it, because every time that there has been a peaceful demonstration, immediately the police start to set in and they start clubbing us.
Well, let me just say something about that, and that is, when, like in the San Francisco area where the nonviolent groups have done lots and lots of work.
Correct, and I think over there, so far the work has been starting to show that nonviolence
is
the way.
Right, but it takes a lot of work, and it takes, I mean, yeah.
That's right.
Just remember that you have to deal.
You're very correct in it, because, you know, to keep on with the movement, you have to really go with it. A lot of people, they, after one or two tries, to say, this is not for me, I got to get out of here, I want to keep going. I want to strive, but like you say, it's not how you start the race, it's how you finish it.
It's also, I think, that people get to think that the revolution means how they're going to be happiest all day long, and unfortunately, we don't have time for that yet. You may have to work, and you may have to go to jail, and you may have to do certain things, and if you get discouraged after 2 years, I think it's pretty pompous of you to think you were going to be able to do it in 2 years.
That's right. I mean, this is a struggle that has started, and I mean, you cannot just quit it, like you say, after 2 years. It will take at least 5, 10, even 20 or 30 years.
Mr. Baez, thank you for calling, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and of course, tonight, if you'd like to speak to Miss Joan Baez, we welcome your phone calls. And tonight, we go out to Albany, New York. Mrs. Carville is hearing Night Call over WGY in Schenectady, New York. Mrs. Carville, good evening.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for allowing me to speak on the show. I'd like to ask Miss Baez a particular question. Why does she feel so completely against the wars that we've had in the past, so much so in our own country, where we at least have the privilege of free speech, and certainly she knows about that.
Okay. I would always like to comment first when this question comes up about the issue of free speech, which is, you know, my husband and I speak very often. And what we say, practically each speech now, because we think it's very important, is something that we could both be taken to jail for. And in effect is what Dr. Spock, if he goes to jail, what he'll be taken for, is there's plenty of free speech, but it often depends on what you say as to whether or not you may end up in jail for it. I don't think that it's ideal as people like to say it is. B, I think that you can't pretend anymore that this is any kind of utopia, or that this is the way things should be run. I think when your tax dollar, 80% of it goes to building weapons of destruction, I think when 80% of the world, 80% of the 3 billion people on Earth are living in misery, then I think that we really have to look at what we're doing about the wars in the past. You see, I really, maybe I'm a freak, but I don't think that anybody... any war has ever been justifiable. I think that the reasons for the wars have been justifiable, but the minute the men started taking each other's lives, I think the cause evaporated. And for instance, our favorite war, you know, would be the U.S.'s favorite war would be World War II. What happened in World War II is when we went out to save the world from, you know, from the inhumane Germans, we ended up at the end of that war dropping fire bombs around Dresden and letting it burn to the center, and we ended up burning down Tokyo and dropping a bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I think that when you pick up this kind of weapon to fight with, that in the end you eventually destroy yourselves. And so I'm not against fighting, but I really think it has to be a new kind of fighting, and that it cannot have anything to do with killing each other.
Well, Ms. Baez, may I say this? I think most people, whether we're as young as you are, or 10 or 20 years, or 30 years older, I don't think any of us have ever loved killing in wars. A lot of our tax money goes in a lot of places that individually we may not choose to have it go. But nonetheless, we have, whether it's perfection of freedom of speech here or not, I find a great many of the kids today, while they want free speech, are never willing to listen to the older person's idea of their free speech. Now, there has to be two sides to every issue.
Yeah.
We've had wars here. There have been wars. There are wars in Russia. These very kids today, would they prefer that they not go to war here and have Russia take us over, or the communists, as you will, come over here and block us out? Do they think they could do the things in that country that they have done here? And if so, why don't they go and try it? Now, let's not kid about this. There's one thing in having an ideal. There's another thing in not, you just can't have everything perfect. You've got to work with what is real.
Yeah.
Well,
I
Mrs. Carville, may I offer this? Isn't it always easy to say that if you don't like what's happening here in America, that you have a choice of going to other countries? Isn't it just as easy to try to apply oneself and say, well, if our system is not perfect, can't we do something about
it
in terms of trying to make it perfect?
Absolutely. I think we should all try and make it perfect. But, you know, we deal with many, many people. We deal with many, many problems, many age groups. Now, we have poverty in this country. There's been poverty since the world began. There's a lot of people I know. I've gone through poverty myself. A type of it. In fact, after in the 1920s, there was a lot more poverty for a lot more people than there is right now. For instance, I think a lot of kids today who may be called living in poverty areas, they still have a lot of things that in those years, my goodness, you would have been living in luxury. Transistor radios, color television sets. You were lucky then if you had patches on your clothes and you weren't ashamed to wear them.
Okay, can I say something in regard to that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that if... I think
Ms. Baez, I'm going to ask you if you'd be kind enough to hold for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. Mrs. Carville, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Joan Baez after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a black entrepreneur, a white consumer expert, a pro-Arab Jew, the Indian wife of a U.S. senator, and Godfrey Cambridge. Monday, Dr. Thomas Matthews of NEGRO, the National Economic Growth and Reconstruction Organization. Tuesday, presidential consumer advisor Betty Furness. Wednesday, Middle East expert Alfred Lilienthal. Thursday, Mrs. Fred Harris, a full-blooded Comanche Indian, wife of the Oklahoma senator. And Friday, comedian Godfrey Cambridge. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Joan Baez about the nonviolent protest. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Dal Shields.
And welcome to the night call stations who join us for the second half hour. Tonight we are discussing music and nonviolence with our guest calling in from Carmel Valley, California, Miss Joan Baez. And prior to going into station identification, we had a caller in from Schenectady, New York, and Miss Baez was just about to answer her, and the question was in the area of being here in America, and of course there is a lot of criticism in terms of the establishment and a lot of criticism in terms of the particular philosophy under which we are now living and under which we attempt to live daily. And Miss Baez, we're going to ask you to respond to that.
If you're really interested, I think, in the phrase Brotherhood of Man, or beginning to make it a reality, it's not talking about just this country. Now, that may be enough to make, you know, a lot of people just hang up or turn off the radio because they're really not interested beyond this country, but I really am. And I think that there is one family of man, and that consists of 3 billion people. And I think that in order for us to begin treating each other honestly and truly like brothers, then you have to realize that each of us is sacred. Now, I may lose another couple thousand people when I say that, because I'm including everybody. I mean, I've met people in various countries in the world, and what strikes me more than anything else is that everybody I've ever met seemed to want to be loved and to love, and I can't find that big a difference, you know, in people in various parts of the world. And I think that I think being afraid of communism is, I don't think that's the real question. But if, you know, if we don't have the time to argue that out and understand it, and if you're still to think that communism is the worst evil on earth, then I'd say, how are we ever going to change communism by doing the same atrocious things that communism does?
Dr. King said at one time during one of his speeches, he stated that I criticize America because I love her. Do you agree with that?
Who said it?
Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yeah. For King, yes. I mean, that was true of King. And King was an American in a way that I'm not. And he always held to the American dream, and I never have. And I'll try to explain why. It is that I think that any nationalism, whether it's American nationalism or any one of the 130 other nation states, I think is a destructive thing. I think because if we could all, you know, think for a second that the only reason we're American, it turns out it's an accident. We could just as easily have been born something else. If we had been born something else, say a Chinese or a Russian, we would have been fed the same stuff we've been fed here about our, you know, about our country, and that it was the greatest thing on earth. I don't think any piece of land is worth murdering each other over. So no, I'm not a patriotic American. I'm an avid human being, and I'm concerned about the fact that many of our brothers we don't even want to recognize as human beings, and they all happen to be starving.
Miss Baez, we'll go out to Stockton, California. Mrs. Springborn is hearing Night Call over KUOP-FM. Mrs. Springborn, good evening.
Good evening. Miss Baez, I respect your position as a leader or sort of a national figure of protesters, and I wondered if you could tell me, in your opinion, why you think the protesters are heckling Humphrey only. Do they realize that their actions are going to contribute greatly to Nixon's election, and do they want Nixon elected?
I don't know exactly, you know, which group you're speaking of, but I think that anybody I would really consider a radical protester is not out heckling Humphrey. I really think that's beside the point, and so I can't speak for them or really why they're doing it. I would argue with anybody who spends his time heckling anybody, because I think it's beside the point. I don't know whether that answers your question.
Well, I think it does. I think in a way it's too bad that we sort of lump protesters into one group, and people like myself, who I consider myself a liberal Democrat in a way, even though I'm not particularly for Humphrey, I feel sad that liberalism is being sort of killed by these protests. And I understand what your answer is, that you say, well, you know, it's not.
At the same time, let me make myself clear so that I don't endear myself too much. I can understand why anybody would want to heckle anybody who's running for office. The kids who have run out of faith in presidents, vice presidents, senators, and so forth, I'm in complete sympathy with. I'm not going to vote. And the reason is that maybe when I was very young, but at some point, I was never interested in playing the lesser of two evils. I mean, I feel that the kind of activity I do, it takes up a lot of time, and I don't feel that I have the time or the interest to spend 20 minutes every 4 years voting for something that I really and truly think is irrelevant. I mean, the last peace candidate we had was Johnson,
and
one of my closest friends spent the time Johnson and Goldwater were campaigning out giving speeches about, you know, why he thought nobody should vote for either of them. everything that the worst that was predicted of Goldwater really came true with
Mrs. Springborn. You stated that the protesters are killing the liberal. I didn't get the last part of that.
I think the liberal movement is dying because the very conservative people are so annoyed with these protesters, and they lump them all into that group, and so they're going to move away from liberalism and go to the extreme right, and I think the protesters are contributing to this move.
Well, I just wish we could move everybody away from both liberal, middle, and right and get them to do something radical.
That sounds very good.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and this time out to Syracuse, New York, Mr. Karp is hearing Night Call over WAER-FM. Mr. Karp, good evening.
Good evening. Ms. Baez, you probably know that some of your records were taken off sale for the soldiers in Vietnam.
Yeah, right.
Would you care to comment on that or try to say why you think they did that?
Well, I'm proud to think maybe they consider me a threat to national security, which is more than I could have dreamed of. It's fine with me. It's probably the first time that a lot of GIs ever knew I existed.
What, were you a big seller among the GIs there?
I really don't know. I don't keep track of sales.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We go out to Detroit, Michigan. Mr. Staub is hearing Night Call over WJLB. Mr. Staub?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
I'd like to ask two questions. First of all, Joan, what's the difference in your mind between a liberal and a revolutionary or a radical?
Okay, I would say a liberal, whatever is considered to be a liberal, is somebody who's still attempting to work within the system and within the structure, still hopes that there's an answer without stepping out of the bounds of working within, you know, the system as it's set up now. A revolutionary, well, to me, my idea of revolutionary is probably very different from what's considered revolutionary. I think that revolutionary means, I think the only real revolutionary thing that could happen would be if we all decided that none of our ideas is worth killing anybody, and then if we really went into action against evil, which would mean that the kind of revolution that takes place on the streets, only it'd have to include the policemen rather than use them as an enemy.
And it's most unlikely that I'll ever get out to Palo Alto or wherever your institute is.
Yeah.
As a person who considers himself a revolutionary or an idealist or whatever you want to call, in Detroit, what do I do? I mean, is there any information or circulars, or what action should I take?
I'm trying to think. Are you in school?
Yes.
How old are you?
In college, a sophomore. 19.
First of all, I say, would you write me, because I don't know what places are any good in Detroit. I know there's a Detroit draft resistance, but I don't have any names I can give you. So why don't you write me or my husband Dave Harris? Just put Carmel Valley, California.
Fine, thank you.
And I'll try to get the name for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight, Music and Nonviolence. Our guest calling in from Carmel Valley, California, Miss Joan Baez. Miss Baez, there's been a lot of discussion, and a lot of conversation, and a lot of print media about your income tax, how you have decided to use the withholding of your income tax as a protest. Would you care to comment on that?
Yeah, I think that if the amount of tax money that went for armaments were 5%, then nobody should be willing to pay it. I think when it reaches 80, it started off with 60 about 4 years ago when I began to refuse paying that percent which went to armaments. And now when it's 80%, it just seems absolute madness. I feel more inclined to ask the question to anybody who volunteers to go ahead and pay. You know, ask them why they've chosen to pay. I think, you know, the least I can do, maybe it's the most, but the very least I can do would be to make a tax collector do his job.
Well, what are the mechanics of this now? You withhold the tax, and is it placed in a trust fund, or
no, at this point, well, this last year I chose to not pay 100%. I write the letter in, and I send the forms in, and then I explain why I'm not paying. And then, well, the first year, it took a long time, and they put liens on the house and on the land, but eventually, you see, the Internal Revenue has powers beyond what most of us could really dream. And what eventually happens is that they walk into wherever the bank is that has the money and flash a badge and flash their teeth and walk out with the money. So that's what, you know, eventually happens with the money. And so my point isn't to try to, you know, hide the money in the mattress or whatever, but the point is that I refuse any more to volunteer it and make the government confiscate it.
Well, do they take all of the money, or they just take the money that is due them?
Well, they just take the money that's due them plus some fines that they feel is due them. I would say, the best thing I ever heard about this particular protest was a Saigonese monk who said that he knew X million number of Vietnamese who knew that there was one woman in the United States who refused to pay to napalm their children.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Miss Joan Baez, who's calling in from Carmel Valley, California, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Joan Baez after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call. Last May in Catonsville, Maryland, 9 concerned citizens, mostly clergy or ex-clergy, carefully followed the Special Forces Handbook recipe for napalm, mixed up a good-sized batch, invaded the Selective Service Office, and destroyed 600 1A draft files by fire. Was it arsonist destruction of government property? Of course it was. Was it also a justifiable act of nonviolent protest? Father Daniel Berrigan, Catholic chaplain of Cornell University, was one of the Catonsville 9 who goes on trial in Baltimore next Monday. He says the draft is a bloody mess. Speak for yourself tomorrow night to Father Daniel Berrigan on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in the country to Joan Baez about the nonviolent protest. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Dal Shields.
And this time out to Moorhead, Kentucky, Miss Parrott is hearing Night Call over WMKY-FM. Miss Moorhead, good evening.
Good evening.
Your question, ma'am.
I'd like to address this, of course, to Miss Baez. I'm a senior here at Moorhead State University, and there was some talk last spring, but it's really big this year. It's been mentioned in class several times. And something I'd like to know, it's a discussion mostly, but still it's something that a lot of people seem to believe in, sort of, I guess, in the same way they're believing in Wallace, things along that line anyway, about there being a sort of a revolution among protesters. Now, this is, of course, talking about all types of protesters, but mostly those people, usually what we consider, I guess, middle-class average, who are fed up with the establishment, whatever it may be at that time. Now, I'd like your comments, first place, if you think such a protest could ever be, would ever be. If so, would there be dissonance among the protesters as to, you know, well, my group's better, my group has the right idea, et cetera. Do you think that anything like this could happen?
Now, which exactly do you mean? Anything like what could happen? I'm really confused what you said.
Well, this theoretical revolution will be probably violent.
Yeah, well, when you say revolution, it's very difficult to answer because everybody or lots of people have different ideas in their mind of what revolution is. To a lot of people, it means hating policemen. You know, to some people, it means throwing bricks. And to others, it means replacing whoever's in power. And to me, it means something that's so enormous that it's, you know, first of all, it's very unpopular, my idea of revolution, because it involves giving up murder. And most young revolutionaries, quote unquote, would like, you know, I mean, the vogue thing right now is to fancy yourself as some kind of Che Guevara or Cuban revolutionary with, you know, equipped with machine gun and so forth. And so I don't really know which kind of group you mean or what you have in mind, what you mean by revolution.
This is exactly what I mean. This answer, you're not knowing what I meant, has gotten the answer I need.
Okay.
In other words, protesters would, if they should, in even so much as band together in any form of revolution, there would be dissonance among themselves as to what the revolution was about or what it was for, who would win if anyone did, etc.
And to the point where we non-violenters, however few number there are of us, jokes about who's going to be at the end of the firing squad when we get executed. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think the far left revolutionary who calls himself a revolutionary becomes in his values and his actions absolutely no different from what he thinks he's opposing. And so I think revolution would mean that we stop oppressing people and that we get an idea of how to stop living off people, how to stop fighting against people, how to stop murdering people. And that of course means that you have to learn how to love policemen or it has to be revolution.
Well, then you find it conceivable that it could happen, but rather improbable that it will?
Well, I think it's necessary that it has to, or I think we'll blow ourselves off the face of the earth. I think the chances of it happening are not too great, but I think that very exciting and very encouraging things happen, you know, each day, which lead me to continue. Well, I would continue anyway, even if I thought it was futile, but I don't think it's futile.
Ms. Parrott,
thank you
for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Out to Tripoli, Ohio this time, Mr. Fessners, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, is hearing night call over WSUI. Good evening, sir. Mr. Fessners has left us, all right? Miss Baez, you mentioned earlier that the youth of the country seem to have lost faith, and I'd like to just explore that for a few moments. There are many of the youth in our country who are being grouped as revolutionists and being grouped as protesters and what have you, but they seem to have dropped out completely of the American way of life, quote unquote, and many are involved in the drug scene. What is your feeling about youth who are involved with drugs?
Well, my feeling is that isn't really dropping out of the American way of life at all. I mean,
is that dropping in?
I think in a way, no. I don't think it's dropping in a good sense. I think it's just hanging on to a series of old weak values. I think rather than moralize about drug taking, you know, which is hard for me to do because I'm moralistic about it, which is pointless. But
well, let's talk about the reasons that they're taking it.
Exactly, which is the only thing to talk about. Well, okay, take a 17-year-old kid, take a 17-year-old male in this country. What are the choices for him to do in the next year of his life? He's going to have to face something which is going to be running his life one way or another from age 18 to 34. Whether he likes it or not, any action he takes is really around, through, under, or over, or against the Selective Service. You know, so that would be enough to make any kid want to take a goofball and just forget about it, you know. And then, you know, I think when you have television that's gotten us to the point where we're either totally shock resistant. I mean, we can see anything. We can see people die. You know, we can see it. We can see wars take place in front of our eyes. And either you're shock resistant, or you try to make yourself shock resistant. I mean, I think it really hurts. I think the way the way the older generation quote acts is, you know, scares us. And I think there's every reason on earth for a kid. When I see a kid who's absolutely whacked out on drugs, what amazes me is not that he's whacked out on drugs, but why isn't everybody else? No.
Ms. Baez, Mr. Gallagher is hearing night call in Lexington, Kentucky. He's hearing our program over WBKY. Mr. Gallagher, good evening, sir.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Your question, sir.
Yes. Joan, what I want to ask you was this. The reason we have armies is that at some point along the way, little boys get the idea that it's good, or at least acceptable, to be soldiers when they grow up. And they see this as part of what a grown-up man is. And
that's why we have armies, sir?
Well, this is a big contributing factor. Yeah. In other words, you have to have enough men who are willing to go along with the system when they reach draft age. And the question I want to ask you concerns war toys and so forth. And you think that, I'd be interested in your opinion, do you think that this is a stage that little boys go through and the parents should cooperate with it and so forth? Or do you think it's better right from scratch? To tell them that this is not something we do.
I don't really know how you handle it, see, and one reason is I haven't had any kids yet.
Yeah.
I like very much what my older sister did with her little boy when he went through the gun craze.
Uh-huh.
That was, she said, blech, you know, I'm not going to buy it for you. If you want the dumb thing, you have to get it yourself. She told him why she hated it.
Yeah.
So, and then she knew that he was still going to want it.
Yeah.
So she could, you know, with his little pennies that he collected, she said, if you want the thing, you're going to have to buy it yourself because I hate them. So he went off and bought himself a gun. Of course, the first chance he could get some little cap gun or a squirt gun. And he came running into the house one day and pointed at me and said, stick him up. And I said, oh, God. And I stuck my hands up in the air. And he said,
uh-huh.
And he said, bang, bang. She said, oh, no, Nicholas, you never, you don't shoot somebody when their hands are in the air. She said, and you never shoot them when their back is turned. And she said, in fact, you're never supposed to point a gun at anybody. I never figured it out, you know. And so he kept a sense of humor about it, but at the same time, he knows he knows that she hates them, and he knows why.
Yeah.
But I think if you ban them and say, you know, and hide them and say he can't play with them, then, of course, he's just going to want to do it all and more.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Gallagher, thank you for calling.
Okay.
Thank you so much. And Mr. Festus is back with us again, this time from Tripoli, Ohio. We'll see if we can get him, and he's hearing Night Call over WSUI. Good evening, sir. Mr. Festus?
Yes, Daddy.
Well, we're having problems with Tripoli, Ohio. All right, we'll take our last call from Missoula, Montana. Mr. Burnham is hearing Night Call over KGVO. Mr. Burnham? All right. Having a little problems here with some of our Night Call listeners, but we reached that point when we must, unfortunately, discontinue our calls. And, of course, it's always a sad time for us whenever we cannot take any more calls from our Night Call listeners. And we return to Ms. Baez and ask her for a few more of her comments. But first, a reminder to all of our Night Call listeners that if at any time that you find difficulty in getting through to us, because there are so many people who do like to call us, we say we're sorry, but there's something that you can do about it. And you can always write us a letter. In fact, we like to get letters from you. And we promise you that if you do write us, that we will answer you. And perhaps you may have a question that you may want passed on to one of our Night Call guests. And if so, we will certainly do so. Remember, the address is Night Call. That's Pomona, New York, zip code 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York, zip code 10970. Ms. Byers, we have just about 3 minutes, and we have touched kind of lightly on music and nonviolence during our conversation tonight. But is there a possibility, or do you see a possibility, that perhaps here in America that we may give up the program of violence? Do you see any time in the foreseeable future that black and white and white and white and black and all colors and all people will perhaps sit down together and make this country a better country?
Well, I'm probably one of about 5 people who will say no and then try to explain why. And that is that I think that if we try to maintain our nation, if we try to keep America, you know, alive and strong, then I don't think that we'll ever have brotherhood of man on earth. And that's, you know, I tried to say something about it earlier, but I think that the idea of nation state is directly in opposition to the idea of brotherhood. And that is, for instance, even if, say, the black people in this country got some of the demands, I think some of the demands are perfectly understandable, but what they are is asking for a larger piece of the American pie. If, say, you know, lots and lots of blacks got lots and lots of jobs, then lots and lots of blacks would end up exploiting Latin America and you know, and doing all the evils that this country is engaged in. And I think it's something that has to break out of the idea of being good Americans and that America comes first. And that means means the breakdown of nations and the replacement by the 3 billion people.
Do you see any hope at all among the 3 political candidates who are running for president?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if you want to keep America the strongest, quote, nation
on Earth, then maybe you could say yes, that there's hope for that, because these are all good Americans. I mean, these people are good Americans, and their job is, you know, to work for the power and the glory of the United States, so maybe one of them could do that. But as far as the 80% of the world is starving to death, I don't see any hope in the three people who are running for president.
Ms. Baez, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
My pleasure, thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Father Daniel Berrigan, Catholic chaplain of Cornell University. He says the draft is a bloody mess. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.